Welcome to the Packweight Show. We've been a group of friends since the early 90s, growing up in South Africa, rollerblading, partying, and getting up to all kinds of mischief together. Packweight is the name we chose, and this show is our way of recounting the tales, staying in touch, and leaving our history for all of you. You can find us at packweight.com. That's PAKWEIGHT.com, which has links to each episode, as well as our YouTube channel and the various podcasting platforms. Without further ado, here is episode one, the beginning of everything. What's up? It's B, I'm Byron, aka Bizzle. I'm here with the hosts with the most, my friends John Q and Frank Joubert, aka JQ, Frankie Frank. We are here with you today for the very first episode of the Packweight Show, where we're going to be going over some old photos and just talking about how the Packweight crew got together, where the name came from, and whatever else comes up. So I'm very happy to be here and introduce my friend John Q. How are you today, my friend?
Good, B. Shot for the intro. Appreciate it. We're coming from Cape Town, and hopefully we get into a little bit of blading history. And excited to share this time with you, dudes. Glad we're finally doing it.
Hell yes, me too. And Frank, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. Nice summer day here, all the way from Germany. And I'm excited to get into this and see what happens.
Absolutely, me too. All right, I figure we might as well just get started. So for any of our friends who are listening, maybe check out the YouTube video. We've got some pictures and on a slide deck that we're going to be talking through. We'll try to describe them as much as possible. A picture is worth 1,000 words. So here we go, and we're starting with the logo. Maybe we should start a bit about where the name came from before we jump into that. And let's start with you, John. What does the Packweight name mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think where it originally started. I feel like it was in high school, and I feel like it came from Clifford and Herman. And, you know, I don't know, Clifford just always had these words that only he would know and use. And somehow that kind of came out of that. And from what I remember, it was from like when the Oaks would scrum in rugby, it'd have their pack weight and it'd be like 900 kilos or whatever. And I think that's where it came from, but we'd have to ask Cliff about that. And it just sounded tough. So we fucking stuck with it. And it just meant to, I suppose, like represent, you know, like show up and skate hard and, you know, represent your crew. And I suppose at the time, everybody kind of had a crew. There was the PTA crew, the Cape Town crew, our Joburg crew. So, yeah, it's just a way to identify ourselves. And,
totally. That's Frank, what do you think?
Yeah, so from what I can remember, and I can't remember much because it's always so high, but it's all a bit of a blur.
But going back 20 years, at least.
I think it started from what I can remember was around the crack flat days when, Cliff and everyone used to hang out like the crack.
Tell us, explain the crack flat before people take that the wrong way.
the name came from.
It's a euphemism. There was no actual crack.
Originally, it was me, Jared, and Jackson that lived
there. Yeah. It was you guys who had moved from Rustenburg to Joburg, and it was your first sort of landing spot in Joburg.
Yeah, it was our first own place. So. Yeah. Yeah, so we kind of stayed there just skating, basically. None of us really had a job.
I think and playing PlayStation, Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah, all day, every day. And so basically everyone used to get together there, Cliff, you guys, and we used to smoke a ton of blaze. We used to blaze a lot there. We had this bong and, you know, it became a bit like rough. We even had some B-boys from Cape Town there and it got a bit cracky. So that's where the name came from, the crack flat.
And I remember Jackson blacked out the windows in his room with black bags. So that I think that's where that whole vibe started.
Anything but sunlight. Yeah.
I think Jackson also brought the B-boys crack in there.
There may have been some actual crack.
Probably.
Yeah.
But speaking of the B-boys, so at the time, we're all hanging out, skating together, and we're also doing graffiti and breakdancing and all the hip-hop culture stuff, which is also where I think the desire for a crew name came around, because we're busy painting and, you know, just representing, as you say, John, ourselves as a unit. And definitely from Frank and Herman, Cliff and Herman, definitely Cliff, I would say, the names, stuff like taking the word soliloquy and making a sing song out of it, like a liloquy.
I feel like a lot of the lingo was developed by Cliff and like Herman. I don't know.
Yeah, I also think so.
Yeah, exactly. And
people would crash there sometimes at the crack flat. And, we had this mattress there. Cliff used to crash there a lot. And, we would at maybe some nights go and skate, go for like a session. And we'd always be filming and stuff.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
This is probably like, I think the first is probably like 2000 around there. I think it was just the first few years out of school, like the first two or 3 years.
It was like definitely
2000 to
1999, 2000.
Yeah.
For sure.
Straight out of high school, for sure.
Yeah.
And
dudes were finding their way in the world.
I think that's where it all birthed from, the whole Packweight crew, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was before then, but that's what I remember.
I think before then it was probably a little bit more team Rosie's. Like, I think that was assigned to us where we were like, no, this is what we are. Team Rosie's was just a part of it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Team Rosie's was a job. The Packway crew was a clique. We were a lifestyle.
Yeah.
A lifestyle.
We were a weed team with rollerblading habits.
Exactly. That's true, and Rosie's was a job to a degree. There were certain responsibilities we had to uphold there.
Well,
I mean, it was a job we all wanted. There was nothing we wanted more than being sponsored for rollerblading.
To get free money from doing shows to pay for that crack flat. So that's definitely, it was a job. We went out, we did shows, we made a bit of money. We converted that money into more money.
and I think that was also the confluence of Frank and Garrett had moved from Rustenburg. Cliff and Herman were coming from Pretoria and the Boksburg side. The rest of us were already here in Joburg. And sort of, it was kind of the coming together of those disparate groups of friends. We were all friends and skating together already. But those times from the early 2000s was really where we connected as a unit, and I think solidified our friendship to a point where it's now 20 plus years later, and you know, we're still in group chats and talking all the time, and over all parts of the world. We're in New Zealand, Canada, Germany, and you know, we all still chat and we're all still amazing friends. So I think that's the reason we are doing this podcast, is to honor our group of friends and to keep it alive even further by chatting to each other and just staying in touch and talking about what's news.
Yeah, thanks for summarizing that, B. That's a big part of why we're doing this.
Yeah.
And so maybe speaking of early 90s, now we are ready to jump into some of these slides. We're starting with the logo over here. And this very first slide, John, do you want to take us through what year do you think this was?
This is probably 95, I would say, 94. This is before I went to the States. I went to the States in 95. So The first person there on the left is Graham Jackson. Then that's me with my hand up. And that's it looks like a Senate hat I'm wearing. Sitting down with his back to us is Toby. Just next to me is Alex Grohl there. Then it's Toby's brother, Ben French. And the person cut out of the photo, just his legs, that's Graham Howard. And that's Toby's garden. So basically where Toby stayed was in Rivonia along the Yixkay River. And Toby had his house on the one side, and then like the bottom of his garden would open onto the river. And then the other side of the river, Alex Grohl stayed. So we'd kind of either meet at the river or mainly meet at Toby's place. And Toby's house at the time had like all these old cars in the garden, and like you could kind of build shit anywhere you wanted. And all those, all that metal and scaffolding and things you see lying around there are things that we had stolen at night, allegedly, from like, you know, properties would put up like, you know, rent in this commercial area or whatever. And we'd go at night with like spanners and like totem pole each other up and undo these massive signposts and skate with them back to Toby's house in the middle of the night. And then we'd use them to build like ramps and shit. So we actually built like a 10-foot quarter pipe. We had, there's like a launch like a launch thing there. And then we built this rail. It went straight, it kinked down and it curved around. And yeah, like Toby was, we were like 12 years old, yeah, I would say.
Absolutely incredible.
And I mean, we were welding and like, well, Toby was. I think Toby and Ben, like, and maybe Graham Howard had the know-how of how to build these things. We were just kind of along for the ride. But already at this stage, we had been skating for some time. Like, we had already gone through the hockey phase. And this is kind of like, we'd probably just met Mel and Brent.
So you're transitioning to aggressive skating.
I'd say we were already well deep into aggressive by this point. Like Senate was a thing, grinding was already happening. Like we had already left hockey way behind. We weren't interested in hockey anymore at this stage. Yeah. We were like fully, and I was thinking about it earlier. A lot of this and a little bit after this, like ASA and the NIS competitions were on TV. Like you could watch that on TV and get like super hyped by, you know, all the competition overseas. And it was just like, and obviously the boom of the early 90s rollerblading, like everybody was talking about rollerblading at least a little bit, you know, everyone tried it. It felt like
everybody. Everybody had a pair of rollerblades at some point, and I do recall actually watching some of those NIS competitions on afternoon TV, and it was so wild. Well, as you say, that's how popular rollerblading was at this stage in the early 90s, where literally everyone had a pair and was trying it out, and to see it on, you know, primetime like TV,
yeah,
in a way, yeah, was absolutely incredible. And to me, the funniest thing about this picture is that you guys are 12 years old, jacking stuff in the middle of the night, right, to build your ramps and rails is so cool.
Yeah, no, it's wild to see.
That's super cool. Yeah, 95 was a crazy time. I think even before that, we were also skating, like from Rustenburg, we were also doing aggressive skating, started grinding stuff, and yeah. Skated ramps and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I think at this time, the only sort of skate park we had known at this time, I think, was the Look Ahead ramps there in where the Morningside sort of health and racket sort of was. They had a big 12-foot vert ramp, which is the one that eventually ended up at Kyle Army. But other than that, there was like no skate park. No, yeah, that it was kind of skate street or build your own stuff, you know.
Exactly. Maybe the only other thing, well, there was Boogaloo's, which we're looking at now. His two pictures, yeah, of John. Yeah. But Boogaloo's was much further away than those ramps. The Boogaloo's was at East Rand Mall. And what's this party you were at here on the left, John?
Bro, it's not the John show, guys, I promise.
There's plenty of other picks. We'll get there.
No, so on the left, that is actually a Keith Stobart's house. And yeah, I mean, you can check the date stamp there. It's 1995. Again, we were like deep into skating already at this time. Like, I'd probably been skating already by this point for maybe 4 or 5 years, you know. And yeah, just that was the Joel, set up the launch ramp and force everybody to watch us skate.
This is the John show.
Yeah, whether they liked it or not.
They seem to be really enjoying it.
They seem pretty stoked.
Young ladies.
Hands in the air.
And that's incredible. Yeah, I wanted to thank you guys both for getting these photos, a lot of these photos together, especially you, John, because, you know, clearly this was a time before any sort of digital cameras. So these are, you know, from the archives, scanned from some sort of hard copy and recovered. Yeah. So it's very cool to see this stuff. Sure, cool to see Boogaloo's. And
it was fun to go down sort of memory lane with these photos and relive a little bit of it. The photo on the right is East Rand Boogaloo's. This was the first, I believe this was the first skate contest that any of us entered. I'm not too sure who else was here with me. I assume like Toby, Nick, probably Jackson, probably Howard, Graham Howard, probably Ben, like our sort of Rivonia skate crew, I feel like. And in the corner, there's my dad with a big VHS shoulder cam. So there is video footage of this somewhere. But yeah, just like feeling the pressure of a competition that none of us had done before, meeting people from, you know, all different places that were coming together for it. It was a rad experience. Super probably, cool. I'd say 95. Yeah, 95, I would say. 94.
Definitely. Speaking of 95, here is a picture from the very first South African Championships, which was in 95 at Sun City, where Mel and Brent, you know, as the Rossi's importers, had brought in some pros from overseas, Arlo Eisenberg, Jerris Steinforth, Renee Holgreen, and then all the rest of us South African kids were there. Frank, do you want to take us through who you're seeing in this photo anywhere?
Can't really see it, to be honest.
Oh, but no problem. No worries.
I know Jackson, John.
I wasn't there, actually. I was actually in the States at this time. I missed it. It happened just after I left to the States, which I remember being super bummed about, because I was like, I'm going to go to the States and meet all the pro skaters. And then, like, they all came to South Africa for the first time. And I was like, how does this happen? But anyway, so I was quite jealous. I remember being bummed that I wasn't a part of it. But
so Toby Herman obviously was there because they won the comp. I think Toby got first and Herman got first invert.
I see Alex Grohl and Graham Jackson and Nick Buchanan.
Yeah, I see
and,
Nick. There.
And I know Frank and Garrett were there. Jim Simpson was there.
I can tell you a story about this. We heard about the comp and we were in Rustenburg, and Rustenburg's like an hour, maybe a little less from Sun City, Strive. So it's we heard closer. There's this competition and we've been skating and we were like, hell yeah, let's go. And we arrived the day after the comp.
What? No way.
Yeah.
Didn't you even skate the contest?
No, we missed it because we only heard about it the day of the contest. So we missed the whole thing.
Oh,
We didn't even meet any of the Joburg guys. Everyone was already gone. But Arlo and all the Rene and all those guys were still there. And Arlo used to come down to the skate park and just chill there, you know. And then he found us there skating. And he was like, yo, what's up? And then he looked because Garrett drew a Senate sign on his skates. And he was like, who drew that? And Garrett was like, me. And he was like, cool. You know, he thought it was like, wow, look how big our company became. Even in South Africa, kids are drawing it on their skates. You know, at the time, I didn't realize that. But, you know, looking back, I think. But anyways, he then taught me to do some grabs and stuff over the box. And, it was really cool spending those moments with him. I don't even know if he remembers. Because we met him after that again, but I don't think he even remembers that. But yeah, it was a really special time for us to,
As young kids, I mean, those were our role models as rollerbladers. They were people we looked up to the most. So that sounds like incredibly cool to have been able to like skate with them, you know, just on your own and with just a few people around, and not even the stress of the competition, just like having a fun skate with like your role model heroes at the time was very cool. And as you say, Senate was still quite a new company at that stage, but all of the young rollerbladers loved that brand so much. Like you know, Garrett drew it on his skates. I remember drawing it on desks at school and stuff like that. So it was incredibly formative years for all of us, I think. And eventually years later, when Senate was no longer a thing, I think it was quite a loss for everyone involved. And I don't recall what the story was with Arlo and what happened to Senate, but maybe that's for another time and we'll get him on the podcast. Speaking of Rossi's and the Kailami skate park, this must have been the following year where Tom Fry is in the photo with a bunch of us young Groms. There's Keith Stobart and Storm Tucson. Is this Keith's sister?
That's Keith's sister on the left, yeah. And then the guy on the first left, I think that's Demogene's younger brother. I can't remember his name. But then Cliff popping his head over the shoulder there. And Cameron Macbeth on the right.
Wow.
And I mean, that's like, well, you can check. Someone's wearing a Boogaloo's 1995 shirt on the right there. So as you said, it's probably 96. I think Kailami Skate Park had just opened. I think they bought a few ramps from the Lookahead Park. Like the 8-foot and the 12-foot used to be together, and they split those apart. So behind the people here is the 8-foot, and then the big 12-foot was like to the right of them. But yeah, I wasn't here for this either. So I just had the photo for some reason.
We went to Boogaloo's from Rustenburg, I think that year, because we met Tom Fry at Boogaloo's. So he obviously did a bit of a tour around. And that at that time, we only knew about Boogaloo's. We hadn't even heard about Kailami yet. So,
okay.
Yeah. I think it had just started, and Tom was a really good vert skater, and so it made sense that I think the vert ramps had just arrived there, as John said. Potentially at this stage, half of the Kailami skate park was still roller hockey purposed. I don't know if it had been completely switched over yet, but this is very cool to see Storm so young and Keith and Cliff so young, and Cam Macbeth. Yeah. That's crazy. I'm going to jump on to the next one. Here is John. Can you take us through this one?
I think this is also before I went to the States. So probably, again, we're sitting in like 95 here, I would say. This is like my 13th birthday, I think. And on the left, we've got James Simpson. I can't remember the other dude, Mark. I'm going to go left to right. Then there's Christopher Henney, legend. I hope he's well wherever he is. Warren Aldridge, he's living in the UK now, also legend. Myself with the two thumbs up. Then there's Nick Buchanan next to me. Sitting in front of him is Graham Howard. He was a little bit older than us, and definitely a lot stronger and like better at skating than us at the time. So he was kind of our OG in the crew, and then there was Jonathan Joseph, another legend. I can't remember. I think the dude's name was Craig. He was also from like a different crew. And the guy in the end was a guy I went to school with named Ryan. I don't think he was too into skating, but thanks for coming, Ryan. Thanks for coming to my 13th birthday. But I made everyone skate. Yeah, so this was awesome. this was at your check the spray paint there. No gods, no masters. This was the green side ramp. That's where the photo was taken. Yeah.
Man, that's quite a trip down memory lane, but rollerblading parties for your 13th birthday were quite a thing. Here's another shot of the greenside ramp where Graham Howard is airing a good 4 feet out of it, maybe.
He was definitely skating, like his amplitude was a lot bigger than us. We were like still little kids where, you know, your wrist guard was so big that it'd meet your elbow guard, and, you know, we were padded up, which was good. Yeah. I mean, at the time we had to be because we were still learning. So.
Yeah, and weighed down by the skates and all the stuff you're wearing, it makes it a lot harder to get that kind of air. And as you say, Graham Howard, I think, is he a year or two older than you, John?
And so two, three years older.
Yeah, he was definitely a formative person in Gazza and Matt in my early days as well, because we couldn't get around it. So sometimes he would drive us home from the skate park and shout out, Graham Howard, bro, we love you. Go ahead, Frankie.
Yeah, dude. I think he's like a year older than me. And yeah, dude, he's a legend. What a legend. Look at him.
Absolutely. He's been living in Canada for at least 13 or 14 years. I believe his oldest son, Carson, is 14 now, starting high school. Lovely family they've got up in Canada. So the time has flown. It would be good to get him on the podcast sometime.
Definitely.
Yeah, all so right. This one.
Frankie and the boys.
This is the Rustenburg crew.
Yeah.
On the left is me, and Garrett's lying on the ramp there. The next to him is Christian Weber also, and that's my brother next to Christian. And then the person on the far right is Billy.
Ah, I thought so.
All legends.
And this was at Boogaloo's?
This was at Boogaloo's, yeah. I think.
No, definitely.
It was a long time ago. I think it was also around 95, 96. Around then. It looks like that era. Big baggy pants, lots of pads.
Yeah.
But Garrett's signature look.
Billy's wearing Impalas, I think. He's got grind plates on, so... Garrett's got
Cal Pros.
Cal Pros.
I can't even remember what model that was, but they were quite popular at the time with the neon vibes. I think like skates were starting to move away from the neon, like the row season stuff were not. Yeah, they were trying to, I think, separate from that like rec neon spandex style of skating. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we went extra large on the pants.
Yeah.
Just to show that we're not spandex.
And to fit your pads underneath.
Yeah, exactly. That too. I think Christian was skating some streets. Some Rosie's streets, maybe. Or maybe they were rollerblade. I don't know. I can't remember exactly. But yeah. Mm. I don't even know what skates I was skating back then.
I think at the time to get skates, like you either had to order from overseas, which I'm trying to think how you'd even do that, because I think this is pre-internet, I think.
There was a skate shop.
I did somehow manage to order. Yeah. I ordered some skates from Rollerblade. I got some Tarmac CEs in like 95 or 96. Wow. And like, I'm guessing... that done? My mom must have phoned. My mom must have phoned America. Yeah. Like, can you please ship us these rollerblades?
Yeah.
And somehow I got them. So that's incredible.
But I remember Boogaloo's selling. I got my first pair of Majestic 12s from Boogaloo's. And like my pops was trying to convince me to get like three sizes too big for me. And I was like upset. I was like, no, like this is the size I want. Please don't make me, you know, skate these boats. So I know you could get from my first pair was from Boogaloo's East Rand Mall of like street style skates that you could actually grind in and like they were built for that. So I know Boogaloo's was selling at the time. Other than that, I don't know how Oaks got skates. So those Rosies that Billy's wearing there, maybe they were from Boogaloo's, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or straight from Alan Brent.
There was a skate shop.
Yes, true.
There was a skate shop at Four Ways, I remember.
Yes.
Like 1994, 1995, around that time.
Yes, like a surf shop. Many
years. Surf center.
Yeah, it was a skate
shop. Surf center.
Yeah.
I used that to buy like, we bought Hoax there and like the Bottom Line and we bought Daily Breads from them and stuff.
They were actually, they stocked decent gear back in the day until they got like corrupted into not wanting to support rollerblading and just skateboarding. And then I don't know why they pulled out, but.
And then Boogaloo's was the only skate shop other than them that we knew of.
Yeah.
At the East Rand Mall. And only after, for us, long after that, we met Malin Brent. I think when the first comps were at Skylami, the very first comp, we went there, and I think I came like last in beginners because we were skating mostly street, and the ramps was like crazy overwhelming for us. For me, at least. I can't speak for the rest of the crew, but yeah, Garrett and I, and well, this crew that's over here, we were skating streets a lot.
We had
one ramp, but we didn't skate it very often.
When was the bio off the 8 foot, Frank? Was that the first comp or was that later?
No, dude, that was much later. That was 97.
Okay.
That was 1997.
Because I feel like we'll get there.
Yeah,
that picture is around. We'll grab it too, just jumping ahead. Well, it seems like ahead, but this is also from the 95 Sun City Championships, I think. Must be, since Rollo was here. This is a very cool picture. We've got Earl on the left and Dan Buchanan just poking his face out behind Arlo Eisenberg. I'm not sure who's got the cap and headphones behind him, but yep. Nick Buchanan on the right and Stephen Bundy. And is that Warren Aldridge?
That's Warren Aldridge, yeah.
And Earl. And
Earl on the left. No, that's a super cool photo. Yeah. Very cool. Shout out to our friend Nicholas Buchanan. We wish you here recording with us. And
Nick.
He's living in New Zealand side these days. Absolute legend. And we'll get him on one of these days.
Back to the John show.
Easy, John.
I didn't make the slideshow. No. So we'll go through it quickly. So those skate, dude, I was just looking, like my style of dress and skating pretty much hasn't changed. I still like to wear baggy cut-off jean shorts and a t-shirt. But anyway, this was probably 96 in the States when I lived there for a little bit. And this was the elementary school across the road from where I lived, and my dad would just come take photos of me skating. And I think I had some Rosie Street there, like kitted out with all like CDS Detroit toe pieces and sole plates and all sorts of things. But those pants actually Toby made for me. Toby was quite the seamstress in his younger days, and still today actually. And he made me those like white jeans, and they had like a big Senate. It was the Senate S, I think, but just like in green stitching. So it was the white pants with green stitching. I think they had that character with the baseball bat on it, the Sinner, you know, that Sinner character that Ola made. Fuck yeah. So that was my little solo mission to the States. I came back to South Africa shortly afterwards, and it was so rad to come back and like everyone skating had gone up so much, and Kailami was now like a skate park that we could go to. It wasn't just Boogaloo's. So I missed a little bit of time. I missed, as I say, the Rosie's champs or the South African champs at Sun City. But yeah, things had grown quite a bit in the time that I left. And I came back with a lot of like cool Senate stuff and things that you couldn't get in South Africa, which all got distributed amongst my friends and disappeared over the years.
Yeah, we loved stuff. It was always an after skate session. So, who's trading what? Who's got? I got this hoodie. If you want to give me this shirt,
that's yeah, totally.
Especially with Cliff and Gaz, I remember it being a massive like, let's trade. Let's trade something. What you got?
Yeah, it was super cool.
And yeah, shout out to Toby, the Falcon, the engineer. Still building. We're gonna get you on here soon too, bro. Right, on a bit of a sadder note, here's a newspaper clipping of Alex Grohl's death in 97. And I'm not going to read through it. We'll share the slideshow with in the show notes on the website and on the YouTube video. But yeah, suffice it to say, this was a very sad and tragic time in our lives. Like personally, I remember being at Sandown High School in the big hall during the, what did they call it, like assembly or whatever it was. And, you know, I kind of knew Alex. You guys were the older kids and, you know, I looked up to all of you. And when they announced that Alex had died and I was just like completely shocked. And then after that was the break. And I remember just walking out of the hall and walking straight into the bathroom and just crying, like just being so fucking sad to hear about Alex's passing. It was, and I think it was formative for all of us as a group of friends to, at that age, to be 14 or 15 and go to our friend's funeral together. It's making me emotional right now.
Yeah.
John, did you have a similar experience, or when did you hear the news about Alex?
Yeah, so yes, the strange story, well, it just sort of, crazy story about Alex Grohl. Like, obviously, we met in high school. As I say, he lived across the river from Toby. And we found out through being friends that his mom and my dad used to date before we were born. So we, like, had this weird bond, like, wow, neither of us would be here if our parents stayed together, you know? So it was cool that we just had this weird sort of, like, you know, tied up history together. And yeah, he was just, I remember he was one of the only other dudes that soul grinded and royaled with his left foot, whereas everyone else did it with their right foot. So it felt like him and I were always skating the same side of the box, you know what I mean? And yeah, he was just like a dude who had so much energy, so much life in him, quite naughty. He was a ginger. I'm not saying all gingers are naughty. I'm just saying like he embodied... just a lot of fun and a lot of high energy. And as you say, I remember the last conversation I had with him. It was at school, and he was telling me about some purple haze that he had gotten from somebody, and like that weekend we were gonna smoke it and like try this you know crazy weed that he had found from someone. And that was like our last plans together, you know. I think I was in standard 9 at the time. He was a matric, I believe. And the same, we found out at school. I think a teacher came into the class and was like, we'd just like to say that, you know, this person's passed away. And same, be like absolute disbelief. And I think I remember his funeral was actually at the river, like his memorial, maybe not the actual funeral. We built a treehouse at that river, and it was basically under the treehouse, and it was just like, yeah, little things set up. And I remember I had a necklace at the time, like these little beads and stuff, and I put that in with like the things that we wanted to sort of lead with him, you know. And yeah, I think as 16, 17 year olds, it was a lot to deal with. Like it was just not something on your radar that you were going to lose one of your friends at this time, you know? And Yeah, I mean, whatever the circumstances around his death are, the fact of the matter remains, you know, it was a big loss. And, you know, it started, you know, an amazing event, which we got to remember him and other people got to speak his name and share in the memory of our good friend that, you know, his legacy and his memory lived on for many years after his passing, which I'm very grateful for. Yeah,
Frank, had you guys met Alex before he passed?
Yeah, we met Alex at Kailami, obviously. He was part of the Kailami crew, as we called it.
Yeah.
The Jabba crew. And yeah, what a cool guy, like always laughing and joking around and stuff. Legend. And yeah, I only heard about his passing at Kailami when we skated there, you know, we got told, so way after he passed away. I think we try to skate Kailami like once a month at least. Our parents would drive us through, and so it was, yeah, it was sad to find out that he passed away.
Yeah, it was incredibly
definitely
sad.
Definitely a loss for everyone, because he was a nice guy. He was always laughing, like I said, and very cool.
Yeah, person, no, he was a great energy to be around. And as John says, he inspired the South African Championships to become the Alex Grohl Cup, became the annual competition for rollerblading. Eventually moving down to Cape Town and, you know, including the whole country in this rollerblading competition. And yeah, what's cool now is, you know, we're still keeping his memory alive now by talking about this and looking back on this. And yeah, may his memory be a blessing to everyone, his family and all of his friends. We miss you, Alex. Oh, speaking of which, I have some very old footage I had found of Gazza that I was looking through, and I've actually got some footage of Alex in there too.
So, oh, no worries.
Yeah, looking forward to editing that a little bit. So I'm almost done there, and then we'll put that out soon.
Rad.
Here, I just here saw. Is the photo. Yeah, I'll go
sorry,
ahead.
I was just reading a little bit on that article. I wonder if his name is still in the Guinness Book of Records. I forgot about this. For a marathon 24-hour rollerblading stint. I remember this. The Oaks went to Kailami, and they skated. I might have even been a part of it. I can't remember. We skated the 8-foot. For like 24 hours. So you'd kind of
what?
Once someone was done, you'd tag in someone else like wrestling, and then you just keep pumping up and down the ramp for 24 hours. I wonder if that's still in the Guinness Book of Records. We must check.
That is absolutely wild.
I'd be rad if his name's still in there. That'd be so cool.
Mm.
That is super cool.
Excuse me.
Let's definitely check it out.
So all right, Frankie, I think
this was in, I think, must have been after 97, 98, maybe 99, around then. Then Dave Kolisch came to South Africa, and nobody really knew about it. We were lucky enough to run into him at Kailami. Well, from our crew in Rustenburg, and Garrett, that's Garrett and I. I'm on the left, Dave Kolisch in the middle, and Garrett on the right at Kailami Skate Park. And yeah, we were so like surprised to see Dave Kolisch at Kailami without even knowing. I don't think there was an announcement or anything. Also, back then, there was no internet and social media, so it wasn't easy to get information, you know. It was all word of mouth. People used to just say this is happening, and we'd find out about it, like Sun City Comp, for instance, along the grapevine.
And a pigeon would deliver a message in a little.
Yeah, so we skated with him, and yeah, it was cool. Nice to meet him. He was also quite a legend from the Hoax.
For sure.
The Hoax 2, I think it was. And he skated this long-ass rail in Nebraska and
Nebraska, the whole thing.
I remember that it was like a 200 plus foot rail. It was insanely long.
Yeah, it was a huge rail, and he was one of the. That's what made him famous, I guess. He was one of the only people to have footage of himself grinding such a big rail, you know. And he made it into the Hoax 2, and Hoax 2 was quite big back then. And yeah, so a lot of people knew about him, and yeah, it was crazy, crazy times.
Yeah, Kalami looks pristine there. Hey? It looks still so new. I don't know. It does.
This was extremely new, and from what I'm seeing here, this is basically the time frame of when that footage I have of Alex Grohl is from. Okay. So obviously it's probably still just before his passing, but early 97 maybe, and just like prime Kyle Army skate park. That just looks good to go. It's, jump onto the next one. Speaking of Kalami Skate Park, here we've got a picture of Frank doing a bio off the top of this huge.
That's the 8 foot.
It's the 8 foot ramp.
Yeah,
and Frank is doing a bio 540, which is sort of an inverted 540, kind of upside down, coming off the side to the flat ground. And I remember this just being absolutely huge. This was the wildest thing I'd seen.
Like craziest thing I'd ever seen. And it was kind of like a street. It felt like a street stunt that you were doing in the park. You know, it wasn't really like a park trick. It was like badass street stunt, throwing it down. Like, yeah, it was. I think everyone knew Frank was after this trick.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, this is a dangerous stunt to do. Let's put it that way. You know, things could go wrong and get seriously hurt. And Frank, do you want to take us through it? How was this? What's your recollection of this?
So, after the first comp, I skated at Kyalami, came dead last in beginners, went back to the drawing board. And I was like, hell no, I'm never going to come last ever again. So, but we mainly skated street in Rustenburg because, like I said, there was no skate parks. The only times we could ever go to a skate park was when once a month, maybe if we were lucky, or every second month, either Garrett's parents or my parents would drive us all the way from Rustenburg to Kyalami, and that's like roughly a 2-hour drive. So it wasn't often, like 2-hour drive there and then 2 hours back. Mm-hmm. And so how I started this was there was this area where there was a little gap with a wall onto grass. And I was like, I need to be able to do something, you know, good enough so people can, so it will, I don't know, like, so I can be noticed, or I can just do better.
To try win.
Or whatever. Yeah, yeah, or to try win, yeah, for that matter. And so what I was doing was, it was probably about, I would say, a foot, but it was gradually going up. And so I would go and do gaps over this onto the grass, and eventually I managed to do a bio over it onto the grass, and then I'd move higher up so that it's higher, so that I could gap something like a stairs or something, you know, doing a bio off a big set of stairs. And there was this at the higher parts there was this roof, but it wasn't like a story high. It was quite a low roof. It was public toilets. So eventually I went onto that roof and I bio'd off of that onto marble. So concrete or marble it was, I think. And I practiced it a lot until I landed it every time. And then it became like my signature trick. And then I went around Kyalami, and I think this was 97, and I looked for a spot where I could try it on, you know. And this 8 foot had a big platform, like a large platform for a ramp. So I was like, this is it. And the railing along the side was high enough for me to get over. I knew I could get over it.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is where I can try it, you know. And so in the comp, I think the first time I tried it, I didn't land it.
Was it your opening trick or was it your finisher?
Opening trick.
Yeah,
it was my opening trick because I thought I need fresh legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
If you do it at
true.
The end of your run, you like finished. Right.
Yeah.
So I thought,
yeah, you're right.
I'll do this as an opening trick. And if I land it, you know, I can then do the rest of my run. And even if I don't land it, I can then still do the rest of my run, you know. And I used this song, and Billy actually suggested it, the song. He used a song from Nas. And I think you guys still remember that song.
Which one?
And yeah, it was like this little intro before the beat dropped. And I was like psyching myself up to do this trick while the intro was playing.
Sick.
Like on time with the beat, like as you land.
As
damn, well, look at this showman.
Not really as I land, but I was aiming for it. To when the beat drops, I'm like midair.
Yeah,
you know. And then
and so was this the biggest bio you'd done at that stage? I presume.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, because if you think about it, the ramp
big
is
air gaps, but nothing this big. I think I was probably about maybe 10 feet in the air there.
Yeah, I was about to say. I mean, if the ramp is 8 feet and that railing is probably 3 on the side, you know, and you're going over, it's a good 11-12 feet you're coming down from to land. And yes, we're using feet because they're freedom units, and ramps are measured in American freedom units. We didn't know what they were in fucking meters, but yeah, this is absolutely an incredible shot. I don't know who took this photo.
I wonder who took the
I think Desna took this picture.
That sounds likely. Shout out to Des, Garrett's sister. Garrett's sister crew. Desna
took this picture. I'm pretty sure she did.
That is so cool. And I'm just very cognizant of the time. I think we've got a bit of a hard cutoff today, and we're going to wrap it up here for now and bring it back on the next recording with the rest of the slides. So I just want to thank you guys to everyone listening. Thanks for checking out the Packweight Show. Let's sign you off, John.
Thanks, guys. I'm stoked we finally did this, and it's always a pleasure to sit down with you guys. I'd just like to sort of dedicate this episode to the memory of Valentina Vergano, who passed fairly recently, her and her mother. She played a big role in all of our lives, and especially mine. In fact, when we were shooting a Stereotype, and, you know, so, yeah, I'd just like to, for everyone in your, may her memory live on. And, thanks for taking us through it today, B.
Frankie?
Yeah, hell yeah. Shout out to Val. And, she did play a big part in our lives, especially yours, John. And, thanks for taking us through this, B. Thanks for this, guys. Really appreciate it. It was awesome to finally do it, like you said. And definitely going to have more of these to come. And B, thanks a lot for.
Good job, my homies. No, thank you, Frank. Thanks, John. Like, I really enjoyed this. And I'm actually really looking forward to going through the rest of the pictures because there's some absolute gems in there. And let's try to do that as soon as we can. But yeah, I want to thank you guys. Thanks to anyone who's listening or watching. Thank you to all of our friends, and shout out to the Packweight crew, Garrett, Matt, Toby, Nick, you know, Gareth, Earl, Alon, anyone I've missed out. Yeah, thank you guys. And much love to all of you, and much love to Valentina and her family. And we're thinking of you, John. I know you guys you know, we're very good friends after you dated for a number of years, and our hearts go out to you. And it's really sad news, but we, you know, we trust that she's peacefully resting now. All right, that's it. That's a wrap for the first episode, and we will see you guys soon for the second episode. If you're watching on YouTube, please do something. Click subscribe, click like, write a comment, tell us you hate us, ask us a question, tell John he's handsome, and we will see you guys next time. All right, peace out.
Peace.